mistaking that voice.
Not at all.
That drum sound is so awful.
It's a little...
click. It's a click, clack, click. The kick drum's like click.
Yeah.
And the snare drum is clack.
It sounds like he's playing paper sacks from down at the local Safeway.
Yeah. Just kind of hitting it.
I like the dry sound of this record, though.
The whole record is... in its entirety, it's a great, 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 great record.
It's a cool record. This, of course, is Sin After Sin from Judas Priest from 1977. And we're listening to Starbreaker.
Yes.
Such a good record. First album for Columbia, if I'm not mistaken.
Was it?
Their first major label record, if I'm not mistaken, there. And it's just freaking fantastic.
It's the first Priest I think I ever... might be the first Priest album I bought.
I think so, because I remember you talking about... you Diamonds and Rust or something,
yeah.
You played, and that was the first you heard of them.
I think that was the first one I bought, yeah.
Yeah.
Drum sound is so awful.
It's
great. No.
Is this Les Binks? I think this is Les Binks.
Yes. Yes, it
right.
is.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah. All right, let's get cracking.
We need to hear one of those.
Let's get cracking.
I mean, crack is awesome. Release the Kraken.
Abbey Road Records show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Abbey Road Records show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Well, hey, Lava! The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and now, he's a hard-casin', fast-racin', weed-chasin', boot-lacin', all the time a hair-raisin', two-facin' baby, yeah. And to get his evil way, he'll do most anything the devil says he can. A.D. Adams.
Well, quote Naughty Holder on that one.
Slade.
Nice reference. Well, step right up and stumble on in to the place even the Sunny Slope hookers, hobos, and our new homeless hot chick arsonist call That Shithole. It's time again for another episode of the Internet's Favorite Mistake. So let's load up the short bus, strap on our drool cups, rev it up, and plow this mess into the nearest phone pole. It's the Shabby Road Record Show. We got records. Let's do this.
Yay. What? I don't have a drool cup.
Well,
come
you're
on.
Gonna need one, Ryan.
Not yet. Maybe yeah. At the end of the episode.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you guys very much for tuning in. This is episode 193. I'm suddenly dyslexic.
Dyslexic, yes.
Yes. We thank you guys for tuning in, and welcome. Welcome aboard here at Shabby Road. It smells delightful in here. You got some incense burning tonight.
Well, it just covers up what it did smell like, Ryan.
Yes. Let's thank Liz Morgan for Liz Damian Brooks. Running the controls over there. What's up, Liz Damian Brooks?
Nothing much today.
The notorious LDB.
LDB.
In the mofo house.
She looks great. She's got the sweater or the
mascara.
Neckerchief.
Yeah.
Walking
in a little derby hat, running in here like the modern day Mary Tyler Moore look, I think. That's what
she's going to make it after all.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's
not
brought
after this.
She's brought with her that cantankerous old bag of bolts. Sal 5000.
All this power surging and throbbing. Yet under control.
Barely under control.
Ooh, I think I've got a boner.
you think.
I think.
I'm not sure.
Give me a minute.
Give that guy some Flonase.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we do have records, baby.
We do, baby.
I've got one. AD's got one.
Uh-huh.
One of the little shorter shows this week. I am moving. I got a new place. I got a new house, so the wife and kids and I are all moving to just basically a half a mile from where I'm at
moving
now.
Moving on up.
But everything is in disarray. My records are packed up in boxes.
How fun was that?
That was horrifying.
Yeah, I bet.
I don't have access to all of my vinyl. So, but we'll be in this weekend, so Yeah, I'm excited.
So you're actually thinking a few days ahead, if not a couple of weeks ahead, which I don't have the capability of considering.
I have prepared
that.
Mystery boxes for the next couple shows.
Yes. I couldn't do that. I'm so unprepared all the time. Yeah. Woefully unprepared.
I'll have my own music room and stuff again. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
So let's give a shout out to our friends over at nameonanything.com.
Well, you darn tootin', there you are, Bubby. Sometimes you just want your name, your logo, and your favorite photo on stuff. I know I do. I want my name on all kinds of stuff. Coffee mugs, key fobs, tennis shoes, bottle openers, shirts, hats, jackets, and mugs. I want my favorite picture on beer mugs, jackets, tote bags, and boxes where I can stash my drugs. I want my band logo on undies and socks, on hoodies and jocks. I want my name anywhere it can be etched, printed, embroidered, glued, screwed, or tattooed. And there's only one place to get all this, Ryan. That's nameonanything.com. That's right. Nameonanything.com.
And you
who do you click? Nameonanything.com.
And you
you heard right. Nameonanything.com.
And you
Again, nameonanything.com. And in case you missed it, that's nameonanything.com. One more time, nameonanything.com. And for real, no, seriously, the last time, nameonanything.com.
Thank you. And you will save you 10% will be whacked off of your order if you mention Shabby Road Wreckage Show when you go over there and visit them and buy whatever tchotchke your business demands of you.
Take advantage of those whack offs.
Yes.
I think we found the title of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's get cracking, right?
That's awesome. Yeah.
Let's get these things going. I'm excited. I got a record that is very interesting. Very, very interesting. And stories to boot as well.
Wow, that's cool. You know, I've got...
1968.
68? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah?
Yes.
A hint of location? Would that give it away?
But it's a band that was probably the most popular in the 80s.
What?
Oh, I wouldn't know.
If someone can figure that out. They were huge in the 80s.
Bryan Adams.
But in 1968, they made their first album.
Oh. Bryan Adams.
No. Leonard Skinner.
Well, I brought me a gem. And it's a true Thanksgiving tradition in my home. And I hope to make it a tradition in all of yours. I'm spinning this little number. And I've got an incredible story behind this record that a lot of people know. It's very cheeky. It's very engaging. And it's a little ditty from 1967 New York City.
67?
67.
So we got 67 and 68.
Yes, man.
Wow, look at us in the 60s.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, Liz has the two playing cards, and we're going to draw to see who goes first. And I'm going to toss it over to you, AD, to pick left or right.
Alrighty, how about that right hand?
How about that right hand?
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, tired. Tired and sweaty.
Are you asking for a wristy?
Yes.
It's red.
It's me. All right. Well, let me tell you, like I said before, this album has been and it continues to be a Thanksgiving tradition in my home since the very first year I bought this album. When I did buy it, shortly after its release, way back in 1960, I think I bought it in probably 68. I might have bought it early 68. But,
I have a guess.
I was 9 years old when I actually bought this record. It's the original one. It's a wreck, dude. I don't know what's holding the jacket together.
Oh, you paused in a weird place there.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
Jack.
Yeah. But it's a true story. It's actually a true story, come to find out, based on actually events.
Based on actual
events that actually took place precisely as the story depicts. Now, this is one of the most famous and certainly one of the most notorious of all genre they call talking blues, which this guy's famous folk singer father laid to claim as one of the originators. The artist tells the story, which combines humor, small town law enforcement bullies, and the anti-war movement over repeating catchy little folky blues riff that, to me, never gets old.
All right.
Now, the story begins on Thanksgiving Day, 1965. The artist, whose record depicts this epic tale, was then just 18 years old. He and his good friend Rick Robbins from Coney Island. Rick Robbins was 19 at the time. They're both from Coney Island, New York. They were invited to attend a friend's Thanksgiving dinner, feast, and party. along with about a dozen others, at the home of their good friends Alice and Ray Brock of Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Alice was a boarding school librarian, and her husband Ray taught carpentry at the same boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
They lived in an abandoned church they had just purchased and ran a small restaurant just off the main drag in Stockbridge. On a break from his first and apparently his last semester at a Montana forestry college...
Wait, what?
He was at a forestry college in Montana. He went one semester and went, eh, I'm not going to do this.
It is a step above clown college. It,
pretty much, yes. Or yes. Napkin folding university.
Oh, I went there.
Yes.
Yeah. Napkin
well,
U.
Yes, he decided to...
Go ringlets.
And, so he decided to drop out. And so anyway, then he and his friend accepted the invitation. They were like, hey, we're available. RSVP, we're going to be there. So guests had stayed the night, utilizing sleeping bags they had brought along, and they slept in the main sanctuary of this church-turned-home. Their hosts had transformed the church's bell tower into their bedroom. The next day after the party, our hero and his friend offered to clean up from this massive feast and get together. There was enough trash to actually completely fill their host's VW bus. Remember the old 60s VW hippie buses?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. There would be no Woodstock without those. but when they approached the dump, much to their chagrin, they went to unload the garbage, and the dump was closed due to the holiday. Seeing other enormous piles of previously dumped garbage just outside the facility, they figured they'd just go ahead and dump their load, one of my films,
okay,
there too. Bad move. Days later, they were arrested and summoned to court to atone for their crime of littering. Hilarity ensues as the small-town sheriff tries to play tough guy with our hero and his friend in a courtroom with a literal blind judge with a seeing-eye dog. The sheriff then realizes that the judge won't be able to take a look at his meticulously prepared photographic evidence, considering that he was blind as a bat. But the cop wins the case anyway. So just for the record, to our non-U.S. listeners, Thanksgiving is a holiday that we have here in America. They don't celebrate that.
Canada has one.
Canada does. Yeah, I don't think England does. Australia, certainly no. Yeah, I think there's just a few countries that do. But it's a holiday in which we give our thanks to God for the fact that Cher will soon reach her limit on the number of farewell tours.
Is that what it's
to
about?
Embark upon? Yes, actually, the number is officially after 10, but it's double digits, and she can't quite go that high. So we're figuring this holiday is going to last forever. You know,
probably yes.
Yeah, but I digress. So, as if his arrest for littering isn't enough to wreck our hero's holiday spirit, he also gets a notification saying that he has been drafted into the military service. He goes on to tell the story of his subsequent medical and physical and psychological evaluation, which he ultimately fails and leads him to being rejected as not fit for military duty. So all ultimately ends well for our hero, Arlo Guthrie, and the classic Alice's Restaurant. I brought the Alice's Restaurant album, and I'm going to play in its entirety.
Oh, God.
The Alice's Restaurant Massacre. Now, a massacre, Ryan, is a colloquial term for all sort of weird, unrelated events that tie together somehow.
Okay.
So, you know, this happens, that happens, the other, you go, wow, that was quite the massacre. So
not to be confused with massacre.
Right, right. Nobody died. No one lost a tooth.
Okay.
So, and as I'm prone to do, like I said, you know, we kind of break the tradition of the supper's ready rule here on these shorter shows, just because, you know, we want to be able to present fully some of our better, more loved records. This is one of the first records I ever bought. Dude, look at the condition this thing is in. It's a mess.
It looks like you
seriously
have...
Seriously, careful. That thing
come
is just...
on.
It's a wreck, dude.
Why?
That's the original. That's the original from way back in the day.
This is going to skip, Liz. Get that
no,
fireball
it is
ready.
Not going to skip. I listened to that thing, God, fuck, 4 times today. This clock's in at 18 minutes and 20 seconds, but it doesn't feel that
what?
Way. I'm telling you, I swear to God, have you ever heard it?
18 minutes?
Have you ever heard it?
It's a whole side of a goddamn record.
It is. Dude, it doesn't even seem like it. It's over in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, right.
It's over in a blink of an eye. Listen, this is one of those little ditties. It doesn't feel...
Little.
Listen.
Little's ass.
Arlo Guthrie's charm, his wit, and his dry, cheeky delivery kind of... it's past the time. You feel like you're sitting down with a friend with a beer and a doob, and he's going, dude, guess what happened to me last week? And
oh boy.
So it's one of those things where it's a great little ditty. I played it.
A piece of the record sleeve fell off in my lap.
Give me that dirty tequila.
Can you please put that back?
I don't know which part it came
off. Yeah, right.
Or where it's been.
But this is one of those things. I've played this record
every Thanksgiving
that I can remember. Even when I was on the road, I would take, if I knew we were going to be out over Thanksgiving, I would take a cassette tape with me back in the day, and I would play it. CDs when I could, but there I can't say I played it every single. I've maybe missed a couple, but
it's a 90-minute cassette tape.
Yes, absolutely. It was a traditional play in my little world, and so this whole event came to light when, after the incident, Arlo Guthrie became. He started taking notes. He's like sort of one of those, what the fuck just happened? Mm-hmm. And so anytime he would remember like a specificity, he would write it down. Well, it became a series of notes. He had no intention of really making a song of it. It just really became not so much a journal, but just sort of a random series of notes just to recall the idea. Well, then he kind of started strumming that ever-repeating chord pattern, which is so infectious, and I love it. And to me, it just never gets old.
I'd like to raise a question.
Yeah.
Do you have the 45?
No.
Damn it.
No.
Really?
But he would then start, he would start telling the story. And again, hearkening back to his father, Woody Guthrie, who sort of invented and perfected the sort of the talking blues story. There's no singing. And he would sit and strum at some of his shows and start telling the story. And it would range anywhere from 15 minutes, sometimes half an hour long. And the crowds were enthralled by it. Coffee shops and concert halls across America, you know, because he was a young touring musician, folk, you mm-hmm. know, in the era of Bob Dylan and all that stuff.
Yes.
So, and it what it really hits on is not only the humor of it, but it really hits on at the time, sort of the sign of the times, if you will, without being preachy or self-righteous. It kind of hits on America's the youth's dissatisfaction with sort of the bureaucratic frivolity, the stupidity, the piousness, and oftentimes the pettiness. You know, sort of follow the law. You can either follow the letter of the law, but I think it personally, that's great. But I think the spirit of the law oftentimes in petty cases like this mm-hmm. become more important. So he's like, he doesn't come across as a bitter, angry. He's just like, yeah, well, this is what happened.
Yeah.
And so he readily admits his, quote, crime of littering. And pays his share of the $50 fine for committing it, but really engages and endears the listener along the way. To me, I have you ever heard this in its entirety?
No.
You need to. Dude, you're going to start. This is
okay,
welcome.
Okay.
Liz, have you?
No.
Okay, well, here's what.
I've heard it on the radio.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how they chop 18 minutes down to
they don't.
Two and a half.
They don't. They play it Thanksgiving Day, and they do not chop it.
Huh. Oh, I've heard it on the oldie station in July. And it was 2 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, shame. Shame. This is, oh my God, this is a travesty. Well, so now what happens then? This was 65 when it happened. Now, fast forward to February 67. He was asked to play live on WBAI FM radio, mm-hmm. in 67. So they were public supported at that time because mainstream pop radio was AM stations
of course,
back then.
Yeah.
So they had him play live on the air, and he was, you know, singing, telling, talking his tale of woe and redemption. And he said he had no idea that they were actually taping it. And this is that performance, along with the entire record. And I had no idea about that.
So, oh, wow,
right?
Really?
Yeah,
that's
man.
Interesting.
And so by May of 1967, it freaking exploded. Now, it was getting so many requests from the radio station, again, which was a nonprofit, that they would start using it. They're going, wow, people really want to hear this song. So they decided, you know how the, you know, channel, the PBS will do the fundraisers, the PBS TV stations will do fundraisers. Hey, send in your money to support the station to keep mm-hmm. us on the air. So they were doing that. So they said that if listeners pledged a certain amount of money, hey, call in. If you pledge $100, we're going to give you a tote bag, blah, blah, blah. And we'll play Alice's Restaurant Massacre in its entirety. Well, they got flooded with people hitting that mark. So everyone who, every time somebody hit the I'm just making it up, 100 or whatever the amount was, dollar contribution, they played it in its entirety. So what they would, they ended up just playing it over and over and over and over. So then.
Did Arlo get a cut of that?
Well, then they started getting requests to stop playing it. So they said, okay, if you pledge $150.
We will not play it.
And which they made even more money. So it blew up. Radio stations all over the country started hearing it. They started playing it. And then it became a Thanksgiving Day thing. So, and again, I honest to God do play it every Thanksgiving Day without fail. Now, this is a long song. It's 1820, so I'm going to keep this brief, but I just...
You're going to keep it brief. You've been talking for like 6-7 minutes.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
I want to keep it brief.
So, since this is indeed Thanksgiving week...
Yes.
...here in the United States, let's consider this my official... Alice's Restaurant Massacre spin, and it's also my gift to you, loyal members of the Shabby Academy. My sincere wishes for peace, love, good health, and prosperity and abundance for you, your families, and those you love. I hope this will become a Thanksgiving tradition in your home or wherever you may be. It allows us to remember to brush off this petty bullshit of some while embracing peace and unity in a world that needs so much of it right now. And it gives me great pleasure to play for you Arlo Guthrie's classic Thanksgiving tale, Alice's Restaurant Massacre.
This song's called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant is not the name of the restaurant. That's just the name of the song. And that's why I call the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Now it all started 2 Thanksgivings ago, it was on 2 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I went up to visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice doesn't live in the restaurant, she lives in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Botcha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there, and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving. And we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we came to a side road, and off the side of the side road was another 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff was another pile of garbage. And we decided that one big pile's better than 2 little piles, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. Said, kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage and just wanted to know if you had any information about it. And I said, yes, sir, Officer Obie, cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage. After speaking to Obie for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter and said that we had to go down and pick up the garbage and also had to go down and speak to him at the police officer station. So we got in the red VW microbus with the shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, headed on toward the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one or two things that Obie could have done at the police station, and the first was that he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. Another thing was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't even counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, Obie, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on. He said, shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car, and that's what we did. Sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this happened here. They got three stop signs, two police officers, and one police car. But when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in the newspaper story about it. And they was using up all kinds of cop equipment that they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster, tire track, footprints, dog-smelling prints, and they took 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. Took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner, and southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. After the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obie said he was gonna put us in the cell. Said, kid, I'm gonna put you in the cell. I want your wallet and your belt. And I said, Obie, I can understand you want my wallet, so I don't have any money to spend in the cell, but what do you want my belt for? And it said, kid, we don't want any hangings. Said, Obie, did you think I was gonna hang myself for littering? Obie said he was making sure, and friends, Obie was, because he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. And he took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll, and have an escape. Obie was making sure, and it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? It's a song about Alice. Alice came by and with a few nasty words to Obie on the side, bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, and didn't get up until the next morning when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obie came in with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back each one. Sat down. Man came in, said, all rise. We all stood up, and Obie stood up with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures, and the judge walked in, sat down with the C&I dog, and he sat down. We sat down. Obie looked at the C&I dog. And then the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and looked at the C&I dog. And then at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and began to cry, because Obie came to the realization that it was a typical case of American blind justice and there wasn't nothing he could do about it. And the judge wasn't going to look at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And we was fined $50 and had to pick up the garbage in the snow, but that's not what I came to tell you about. looking to talk about the draft. Got a building down New York City, it's called Whitehall Street, where you walk in and you get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I went down to get my physical examination one day, and I walked in, I sat down, got good and drunk the night before, so I looked and felt my best when I went in that morning. Cause I wanted to look like the all-American kid from New York City. Man, I wanted to feel like I wanted to be the all-American kid from New York. And I walked in, sat down, I was hung down, brung down, hung up, and all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down, they gave me a piece of paper, said, kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. And I went up there, I said, shrink, I want to kill. I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean, kill. And I started jumping up and down, yelling, kill. And it started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling, kill. The sergeant came over, pinned the medal on me, set me down the hall, said, you're our boy, and you feel too good about it. Proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, detections, neglections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, and I just having a tough time there, and they was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they wasn't leaving no part untouched. Proceeded through, and I went, finally came to see the very last man. I walked in, sat down after a whole big thing there, and I walked up and said, what do you want? He said, kid, we only got one question. Have you ever been arrested? I proceeded to tell him the story of Alice's restaurant, Massacre, with full orchestration and five-part harmony and stuff like that, and then all the phenomena stopped me right there and said, kid, did you ever go to court? I proceeded to tell him the story of the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one and stopped me right there and said, kid, I want you to go over and sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid! And I walked over to the bench there, and there's his Group W is where they put you. If you may not be moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime, and here was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench. There's mother rapers, father stabbers, father rapers sitting right there on the bench next to me, and one, it was mean and nasty and ugly and horrible and crime-fighting guys are sitting there on the bench. And the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he was mean and ugly and nasty and horrible and all kinds of things. And he sat down next to me and said, kid, what'd you get? I said, I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $50 and pick up the garbage. He said, what were you arrested for, kid? And I said, littering. And they all moved away from me on the bench there, and carry eyeball and all kinds of mean, nasty things, till I said, and creating a nuisance. And they all came back, shook my hand, and we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, all kinds of groovy things that we was talking about on the bench. And everything was fine, we were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of things, until the sergeant came over, had some paper in his hand, held it up and said, kids, This piece of paper's got 47 words, 37 cents, it's 58 words. We want to know details of crime, time, crime, and else kind of thing. Got a safe time to about crime. Want to know the rest of an officer's name and else kind of thing. You got to say and talk for 45 minutes, and nobody understood a word that he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench there. And I filled out the massacre with the four-part harmony and wrote it down there just like it was, and everything was fine. And I put down a pencil and I turned over the piece of paper, and there on the other side, in the middle of the other side, away from everything else on the other side, in parentheses, capital letters, quotated, read the following words. Kid, you rehabilitated yourself. I went over to the sergeant and said, Sergeant, you've got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I mean, I'm sitting here on a bench. I mean, I'm sitting here on a Group W bench. Cause you wanna know if I'm moral enough to join the army, burn women, kids, houses, and villages after being a litter bug. He looked at me and said, Kid, you don't like your kind. And we're gonna send your fingerprints off to Washington, and friends. Somewhere in Washington, enshrined in some little folder, is a study in black and white of my fingerprints. And the only reason I'm singing you the song now is because you may know somebody in a similar situation. Or you may be in a similar situation. And if you're in a situation like that, there's only one thing you can do, is walk into the shrink wherever you are. Just walk in and say, shrink. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant and walk out. You know, if one person, just one person does it, they may think he's really sick and they won't take him. And if two people do it in harmony, they think they're both faggots and it won't take either of them. And if three people do it, can you imagine three people walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out? They may think it's an organization. And can you imagine 50 people a day? I said 50 people a day walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, walking out. And friends, they may think it's a movement. And that's what it is. The Alice's Restaurant Anti-Massacre Movement. And all you gotta do to join is to sing it the next time it comes around on the guitar. With feeling. So we'll wait till it comes around on the guitar here. Sing it when you're done. Here it comes. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
That was horrible.
Want to end war and stuff, you gotta sing loud. You could put a lot. I've been singing the song now for 25 minutes. I could sing it for another 25 minutes. I'm not proud or tired. So we'll wait till it comes around again. And this time with four-part harmony and feeling. We're just waiting for it to come around is what we're doing. can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Accepting Alice, you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. So walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. At Alice's restaurant.
And there you have it. One of the oldest records in my collection, as you can
sounds
hear.
Like it. Yeah. So that was very charming. You're right. And that's the first time I've ever heard it all the way through. I feel like I've heard bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Maybe there isn't a 45 version. I don't know. One of our listeners can maybe tell us. But maybe I just caught the tail end of it, one time.
It is. I love it. I love the tradition of it. I love the story. He's charming. He's cheeky. He's just – and it was so of its time, and I got so – compelled and caught up in it then. And of course the radio stations picked up on it, and then most radio stations in most towns in America, at least one of the radio stations is going to play it, and they're going to make a big deal of it.
What's also cool, dear listeners, is that you can listen, if you have a tradition of listening to Alice's Restaurant, now you have the opportunity to play A.D. Adams's copy of Alice's Restaurant
right?
on Thanksgiving. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, and that's awesome, and that means a lot to me. So from us to you, whether you do Thanksgiving where you live or not, we wish you the best. All blessings and good things. It's a happy little song about crazy times and just delivered in the cheekiest, most charming way imaginable. Yeah. That's Alice's Restaurant, Massacre from the Alice's Restaurant record by Arlo Guthrie, written by Arlo Guthrie, produced by Fred Kellerman on Reprise Records. Came out October 1967. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
All right, AD.
Thanks for indulging me, you guys.
Yeah, what's very strange about what you just played is that you brought a folk artist with an 18-minute song.
Now, it didn't seem like 18, did it?
No, not really. I brought a prog rock band with a 3-minute song.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Jesus, has the world turned on its ear or what?
A man by the name of Jonathan King is going to be the central figure in the story of what I got in my mystery box here tonight.
Okay.
Jonathan King was a pop star in his own right in the 1960s in London in the UK. He had some big hits back in the day, but he produced a lot of bands. He wrote songs for 10cc, and he produced the Bay City Rollers. Ooh. All kinds of stuff like that.
Yay.
But one of the most legendary bands that he discovered one day is Genesis.
I was going to say, why is that name familiar?
And I brought a record called In the Beginning by Genesis. This is also known as From Genesis to Revelation.
Yes, it is.
This is the debut record of the prog rock juggernaut known as Genesis. Now, the original record came out in 1968 on Decca. This is an American release from 1977 on London Records. So Jonathan King is the guy that discovered them, and I'm going to talk about them. So we're going to basically kind of talk a little bit about the beginning, the genesis of Genesis, really.
Well done.
Before we start.
Well done, done well.
What do you think of this record? You have it, don't you?
I like it. I have both versions. I actually have both versions.
You have the From Genesis to Revelation copy.
And
then
this one as well.
I don't believe there's a difference, is there?
No, I don't think there's any at all.
Right.
Just the cover.
I've heard that you could license this, like Jonathan King owns it, basically, and you can license it, anything, for dirt cheap.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why there's so many reissues of it.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he can just keep on. It's sort of like, we heard Judas Priest at the top of the show, like Goal Records would put those Judas Priest records out a million times over. Hero, Hero, Rockarola, and, they'll just pump out the best of Judas Priest,
Or it's like the Rolla Rocca, the new version of it.
Yeah. Remastered yet again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it sort of falls under that category. So the boys in Genesis are pupils of the Charterhouse School in Godalming, Surrey.
Is that an art school, Ryan?
Of course it is.
Yes.
And the five members of the band played in that school's two popular bands. Of course, you were in junior high at one point, back in Covered Wagon
sure,
times.
Yes, yes.
But you had bands, you know, and you guys would play the dances and stuff like that. And there's always, it was your band and probably another band.
Yeah, absolutely. Your band. School, my school, everybody's school had those two rival bands.
A couple bands, yeah. The two bands at Charterhouse School in Surrey were Anon, A-N-O-N. Which featured...
with my habits, it's Anon.
Anon. Yeah. Okay.
You know. Al-Anon. Mm-hmm.
The two people in that group, Anon, were Mike Rutherford and Anthony Phillips. Mike Rutherford, of course, was still a member of Genesis. You know, I think they're probably finally done now, Genesis, but of course, everyone knows Mike Rutherford as one of the three.
They were done when Peter Gabriel quit.
Okay. All right. Yeah, easy now. And Anthony Phillips was the original guitarist. So the other rival band was Garden Wall. And you know that's Peter Gabriel.
Oh, yes.
and Tony Banks and the drummer as well, who didn't stick around very long.
No, I think this is his only record, right?
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. They had a sort of a revolving drummer throne.
John Silva.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't even
Long think. John.
Is it John Silver on this record?
Well, so short and wide John Silver.
So whoever the other guy was, he didn't even make it onto the record. So.
Girthy John Silver.
Wow. So in January 1967, after both of those high school bands, or junior high bands probably, had split, Anthony Phillips and Mike Rutherford continued to write songs and invited the rivals over, that would be Peter Gabriel and Tony Banks, to participate in the writing sessions during the Easter school holiday. So we're Thanksgiving and Easter holidays here.
Oh, how about that?
So they entered this sort of primitive recording studio run by a guy in Cheswick
named A.D. Adams.
Yeah, Shabby Road.
Primitive, yes. Right. We don't have a drum kit, but we do have skulls you can hit on.
Yes.
And logs.
They ended up making a six-song demo, and what it was they wanted to write songs for people. They saw themselves mostly as songwriters.
Okay.
That's what they wanted to do.
Smart, right?
Let's go back to Jonathan King, who I started this whole segment with. Jonathan King visits the Charterhouse in Surrey on Old Boys Day, which is...
Okay, now let's talk about Jonathan King's intentions going to a... Never mind.
Oh, no, easy. Oh, we'll get there.
Yes, Googling shirtless boys.
I only want to tell a story.
Oh, no. Oh, God. I hope I haven't struck on something there.
No, no.
Oh,
well, kind of. So Jonathan King is, that's his alma mater, right? In Old Boys Days is when, like, you went to that school, you're famous, it's career day, I'm Jonathan King, I went here, you boys, you chaps can be just like me one day.
If you take a ride in my van.
Yeah. So somebody passes him a copy of this six-song demo that the boys did. I mean, these... now, let's also talk about... These
kids.
Guys are in ninth grade or eighth grade or maybe 10th. You know, it sort of varies. So Jonathan gets this tape. He pops it into his car on the drive home. And he digs it, and he's like, "Follow this singer, Peter Gabriel. This Gabriel kid is a great singer. I think I see some potential in these guys." So he wants to sign them as a band. Like, you guys, I like what I'm hearing. I mean, it's horribly recorded.
Sure, but the guts were there. The
right.
Essence was there, I suppose, right?
Right. So he, long story short, he gets with them. And so, of course, they're super excited because this guy, Jonathan King, is a pop star.
Sure.
And so he's like, all right, you're under my management, my tutelage now. and you're called Genesis. And they're like, okay, fine.
That doesn't hurt.
Yes. So this is the guy that names them Genesis, right?
Oh, wow.
And he encourages them to write more pop songs. But what you ought to be doing is writing songs like the Bee Gees, who are having hits right now. And we all think of Bee Gees as a disco act. But in 1968, 1967,
they were deep.
They were also making hits in a Baroque pop sense, a very British pop.
Very much so.
Which are great records, by the way, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that late 60s kind of Baroque pop. So Jonathan King has them writing in that vein. And then also they go in and they record this album. And then he adds layers of like syrupy strings and like these horn flourishes that you might find on the Bee Gees early records, the late 60s sure. records. So, and also, of course, being a manager and being in the music business, AD, this Jonathan King.
We're going to need a shirtless promo photo, boys.
I want you to sign a contract with me.
Well, that's exciting for got kids that age, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, we're signing a deal.
Basically, look high school
us.
Kids.
Yeah.
You know? They're like, all right. So Jonathan King, though, has to go to mom and dad of all the members because they're under 18.
Oh, right. Okay.
So he goes, I want to sign you guys to, my label. But then when he goes to the parents and it's like a 10-year contract.
Oh,
and the parents are like, oh, no, no way. No way in a million years. The parents wisely said, no, these boys they're in college. They're going to college. They're going to be mathematicians and doctors and lawyers.
Chemists and cheese shop owners.
This stupid music thing is no career at all.
Right.
They're going to do 1 year. That's all you get. You're not signing our boys to 10 years of basically indentured servitude, right? You're going to.
Sure.
So yeah. The parents stepped in and were like, 1 year, we'll do that because the boys are excited because they'd have been like, yay.
And
so, just like so many other,
yeah.
You hear the stories of like a Billy Joel or whatever with Artie Rip and goes, oh. Yeah, I'll sign that, whatever.
I don't know about you,
I'm gonna
but
be
I
famous.
Smell a rat, yeah.
So that's probably one of the reason why we know Genesis really is because of that, because their parents stepped in and said, no, they're not signing with Jonathan King. They just did this one record. So they fulfill the contract with Jonathan King for 1 year, and he gets them on Decca Records, which is a pretty big label,
big
right?
Big deal, yeah.
Yeah, and once the year was up, they went their separate ways because the record basically tanked. It sold maybe 400 copies, and that was that, right? And so the guys in Genesis went back to school to finish going to high school, right? And then they would reconvene after high school, and they by then, you know, they're like way into like King Crimson and all this other stuff, and so their
much
stuff
heavier
is
heavier stuff and
right.
deeper arrangements and
right and so they're making this more adventurous music that we would come to know Genesis for, and then they end up getting signed with Charisma Records, and the rest is history. So this album that we're going to listen to is very different from what you think Genesis is, certainly from the 1980s and late 70s with Phil Collins, because he's not even in the picture yet.
No.
But it's even wildly different from what the height of the Peter Gabriel years is.
It is. You're not going to find a Hogweed on this record.
No.
You're not going to find an old King Cole on this record. And
right.
You're not going to find shrouded figures walking across your lawn.
Right. It's right. A fascinating artifact,
right.
Is what it is. It's sort of like we are just digging through the dirt here, so to speak, to coin a phrase that I believe Peter Gabriel used later. But we're digging through the dirt and we unearth this ancient recording of the boys, basically in... It's got to be 10th grade.
What's his 11th. Take on this? I don't mind this album. I mean, if you take it as a Genesis, if you try to put it in the Foxtrot Nursery Crime era, even the Trespass era, it doesn't quite fit. But
not
it's
really.
Still not, still a pretty darn good record for knowing
for a bunch
what it
of
is.
Kids,
yeah.
You could tell that there is something really special about that core group of dudes.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of smart arrangements and the sound of Gabriel's voice is already intact and the energy's there and all the things that sort of X Factor is there. It sounds like it's a Bee Gees record. It sounds like Bee Gees first or not even Trafalgar. It sounds like Horizontal or, you know, those early Bee Gees records.
Oh, okay. Like
68. Yeah. So it's very 1968. There's no getting around it. AD in September of 2001. Jonathan King was convicted of child sexual abuse and sentenced to seven years in prison for having sexually assaulted five boys.
Oh my God.
Ages 14 to 15.
And the name of the band is
the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
He was released on parole after 5 years, and then he was charged again by more boys that had come forward, but those charges were dropped. I read an interview with Jonathan King that was weird. Whoa. Where he was like unrepentant about it. He's like, it was totally.
Oh, like really? Like,
he was saying that it was, what's the word I'm looking for? It was consensual.
Platonic.
Consensual. Well, like these 14-year-old boys were like totally down with blowing him.
Knife point. Changes your mind.
I love Michael Jackson.
And it's totally
they
like
just
him.
Sleep in the bed together.
Basically doing what, you know, he did with Genesis, but by no accounts do
much,
I find
further,
any.
Yeah.
There's nothing like that in regards to Genesis that anyone's ever said. So, you know, it's just like you could see him using that fame and that sort of clout, especially after Genesis was huge. You know, it's like, I discovered Genesis.
Oh, I'm the guy. Yeah.
You know,
totally the guy. Look what I did.
So he's certainly a villain in this case. Jonathan King.
It's fucking creep.
And obviously Genesis in later years would distance themselves from him.
Yeah.
Wow.
And really it's only 1 year that they were associated with him, but he's the guy that got them started. But then once they went back to school and finished school, they basically started from scratch.
And he was unattractive to them. Or they were unattractive to him.
You've got a mustache?
Yeah, he was on good behavior in jail because, well, these men are much too old for my taste.
Yeah,
right.
Of course.
Right. And so thank God for Charisma Records.
Wow,
and they picked him up. And they hit the college circuit. I mean, Genesis' whole thing was that, you know, after this record, and they expanded their sound, they kind of got more into the prog area, which was a scene in England
very
at the time, and they started playing colleges, you know, and people were into that stuff, the fans.
It's interesting because back in the day, the college circuits, the Rathskellers and the student union halls, they would take chances on music rather than sort of the club scene. And
right.
There was a definite difference in that scene. There was the college scene and the dorm parties or you know, the frat parties is one type of band, and then the club scene is another. But then there were certain student union and like the school radio station sponsored events was a whole nother scene.
Yes.
So there was a lot deeper. There were a lot more outlets and a lot more avenues to be who you were as a group back then.
Certainly.
Which doesn't seem to be as much of that anymore.
Well, yeah, what you're saying too, like it's like there's this dance party where you got to play stuff that people can dance to, but then it becomes this thing where people listen to your music.
Right.
And so that was obviously a coup for a band like Genesis who really explore that territory and utilize that.
Right.
To build a career on. And their albums never really sell until much later in their career,
honestly,
Foxtrot. And
right. I mean, really, Phil Collins. I mean,
really is that.
I was hip to him. Some of my friends were, but certainly not a lot, you know?
Right.
And it was really all of a sudden, if you heard this new band, Genesis, Phil Collins is a singer. And I'm just going, no!
That's not Genesis.
That's, you know, not my Genesis.
One quick little funny thing about Genesis is like this Genesis to Revelation is a very loose concept album about life and about, there's obviously a biblical bent to things and discovering, you know, God or what have you. But it's very veiled. You know, the song I'm going to play is in the beginning.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but the point I'm making is that Phil Collins had a band called Flaming Youth, and they did a record called Arc 2, which was a concept album around the same time. And then future guitarist Steve Hackett was in a, I forget his band's name, but they made a concept album at the same time. So all of the classic version of Genesis, like that did Foxtrot.
Right.
Everyone in that band made concept albums first. Was their initial opening salvo was this grand statement.
Well, it was very destined right. to be in that format for yeah. those five guys.
Yeah.
The classic Genesis.
That Flaming Youth album, I love. It's a great record. I love
it. Is it on Spotify?
Yeah, you can listen to it on Spotify.
Oh, I'm going to find that.
I think I played a part of it for you one night. And it's like, yeah, this is Phil Collins' first album. I mean, he sings like one or two songs, but the band's really good.
I got to recheck that out. I must have been drunk. 2. I don't remember that.
Like Ark 2, it sounds like it's your second album, but it's like Noah's Ark Part 2.
Right.
Where they go to space. So it's like space rock.
Of course.
So check that one out too.
Yes.
But let's go to side one, track 2AD. This is In the Beginning from a very young Genesis. Think of your band in high school.
Oh, yeah.
And then drop this needle, right. And it'll make you feel like shit. Because he's like, yeah. As goofy as this song is, and you go, oh, ha, 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 1968, blah, blah, blah. Think about how talented your band was at this time and what it sounded. Because it's like, wow, these guys were onto something already.
And to get the opportunity to do so, I suppose.
Yes, exactly.
So everybody strip down. Let's put this on.
Why don't you and Dudley take your shirts off and let's get some pictures.
Ocean of motion, squirming around.
And there's your Bee Gees sound. Right? Yeah, take that off. But I'm glad that happened after that track, because that's where the Bee Gees thing, you can really hear it totally, right?
Yeah, you know, and we were discussing during the track, actually, that there really is a natural progression from this into Trespass.
Yes,
That is
great album.
Tangible. And it's funny also that we were discussing the effect, the vocal effect on Gabriel's voice.
Mm-hmm.
Is they went, we kind of like that. Let's stick with that. You know, the slight delay and the texture and the equalization on his voice. They stuck with that.
They did. And you got to assume it was the engineer and maybe even Jonathan King himself, maybe that put those effects in there, and they became enthralled with that and made a career of it afterwards, maybe.
Yeah, kind of very much became the trademark sound of Genesis, or at least the voice of Genesis at the time.
Yeah, man, that voice is great. Peter Gabriel sounding exactly like Peter Gabriel at 17.
Oh, you could put on Salisbury Hill and you'd hear the same vocal, right?
No wonder they drove the attention of someone like, oh, these guys are great.
Very compelling in that way.
Right.
Not a hook on the damn record, but...
Not really.
No, but...
But a very interesting record to listen to if you're a fan. Like, you have to have it and listen to it and go, wow, it's so weird.
Very important if you're a Genesis fan at all. It's definitely worth getting, and you find them cheap. They're not free, but you'll pay about six bucks for them.
Yeah, what we're listening to is a rehash of it from '77 called "In the Beginning."
Right.
You probably want maybe the original from Genesis to Revelation, which is a completely black cover. You have
not
right?
completely, yeah, but with very little illustration on it. I've got them both. I got the original and this,
and that would be the original. And it's no wonder it didn't sell, because all you see is Genesis from Genesis to Revelation. Is this like the Bible
and
on a record?
Yeah, the song titles, you're going, what?
What is
Yeah.
This looks terrible.
Not very compelling as a rock fan,
no.
You will,
so it's
in that
clearly off the mark. There was Jonathan King in all of that. But somehow they managed to become one of the biggest bands in the world.
Right.
Isn't that crazy?
You got to start somewhere.
That's right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. This is going to do it while our mystery boxes are officially depleted here.
They are. They are indeed.
So let's thank Liz Damian Brooks for running the controls, the notorious LDB.
Yay.
Do you enjoy the music tonight?
I did. It was rather interesting.
I like these little shorter shows. It does tend to get a little more interesting in terms of the song selection.
Yes.
It's no different with the crazy stories that we tell.
No, but we can be a little bit more indulgent, I think, with them.
Yeah.
Yes. And thank you, Sal 5000, for hanging out with us here again tonight, too.
And Sal would like to thank all of our veterans on today.
Mm, she'd like to bang all our veterans.
She says.
Oh! Sal like a good old Sousa march to get your flag up the pole, if you know what I'm saying.
Sal was so patriotic.
She's not.
It's Fleet Week.
She's a whore.
It is Fleet. The fleet's in, and Sal's like, hey, I'm open for business.
Sailor boy.
Well, if you enjoyed the music tonight and the frivolity that Shabby Road offers, please visit us on the various social media outlets. That would be your book faces, your thing with the bird, and that Instagram at Shabby Podcast. And also, one way you can really support the show is to leave us a review on iTunes. Hey,
please
well,
do.
Why not stop by? Five stars, no less, please.
Right, yeah, thank you.
If you really hate us, like, why bother?
Right.
You probably wouldn't have made it this far.
You weren't listening anyway.
You wouldn't have made it past Alice's restaurant.
No.
But if you did and you're like, I like these guys, just go ahead and leave a review for you.
It really does help us.
For us. Well, AD.
What you got?
The mystery boxes have been turned upside down and emptied like my wallet in a brutish record store. So that means it's time for me to say toodle pip. to me wobbly throwing counterpart, A.D. Adams.
Well, right, mate. That is indeed that. What is done, and there's nothing we can do to make it better. There's no cream, no lotion, no salve, no Band-Aid large enough to make the bleeding stop. So toughen up, Buttercup, because we got more coming to you next week. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We really appreciate you being out there in all seriousness and for being such an important part of this show. We couldn't and wouldn't do without you, mates. And to my pal and my co-host, again, Ryan McKay, I'll see you right here next week, my brother. So in the meantime, I wish you an ond igloo.
What?
Fond adieu.
Ond?
Ond. Ond, like awning. Ond.
Ond, like an ond, awning.
Ond.
Wow, that is igloo. A stretch.
What you gonna do about it?
You don't even get any claps.
A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code SHABBY at checkout and save 10% on your order. nameonanything.com.